ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
It is not unfinished business any longer. South Carolina has captured its second national championship. Tears of triumph in 2022.
The UConn Huskies may be the most dominant program in women's basketball history, but they just got bulldozed for 40 straight minutes by the South Carolina Gamecocks, earning head coach Dawn Staley her second career championship. So Katie Barnes joins us from Minneapolis to break down what they saw. And then over on the men's side.
13 to shoot. Love dribbling. Gets a screen. Three, top of the key. Oh, he got it! Caleb Love!
And so before North Carolina and Kansas tip off in their title game tonight, Myron Medcalf takes us to New Orleans, where Tar Heel fans are absolutely still drunk and Duke fans are definitely still crying after a semifinal that somehow exceeded all the hype imaginable. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, April 4th. This is ESPN Daily. Katie Barnes, where are you right now exactly?
I'm currently in a hallway, sort of off of the media room and off the court, just hoping that nothing is too loud. There's a Coke machine in front of me and a security guard. It's very exciting.
This is the glory of the aftermath of a destruction, Katie. Like, what was it like to be in the building while the game was happening? Because not far from you, we just saw the South Carolina Gamecocks just obliterate UConn. 64-49, Dawn Staley wins her second title in program history. What was it like to be there?
It was pretty incredible. You know, this was a matchup that everybody wanted. You know, it's kind of like the game, at least the matchup that, you know, the season deserved. You had a dominant South Carolina team get to the championship game on their mission for redemption after losing in the Final Four to Stanford last season. And then you had a UConn team that somehow just kind of kept winning, even though nothing seemed to go their way. That team had a horrific December and January with injuries and illnesses and more losses than that program has seen since 2005 in the regular season. And so, you know, getting all the way here, you could tell like the crowd was just electric. People were so into it. And then the game started and it was like a complete, like, it happened very fast, like in certain moments where South Carolina just ripped UConn apart. But then UConn kept hanging around. They came back. They chipped away at the lead. And then it still just ended up being like inevitable. You know, like South Carolina kind of was inevitable this season. And that's ultimately what we saw tonight. And the crowd really responded to that.
Yeah, I mean, South Carolina, obviously the number one overall seed in the tournament, the best team all year, as you just alluded to. But what they did to UConn physically, Katie, that's what we don't really have a prior sort of experience with, right? I mean, Gino Auriemma had been undefeated in title games, 11-0 before tonight. And what they did, what South Carolina did, like on the boards, that to me was just jarring to watch on television.
Yeah, they just bodied UConn, moved them out of the way, and snagged what felt like every single rebound available. You know, offensive boards, defensive boards, they just had a ton of putback opportunities, and they capitalized on it. And, you know, UConn came into this game with a decimated front court. You know, Dorca Juhas went down in the Elite Eight game against NC State with a wrist injury and has been unavailable for the Final Four and the national championship game. And against a South Carolina front court that has size and strength and depth, UConn just could not physically keep up with what was happening down in the paint. And South Carolina, as they have done all season, just punished anyone who dared get in their way to grab a ball off the rim. It's that simple.
Yeah, I mean, South Carolina, statistically speaking here, they had more than twice as many rebounds as UConn. They almost had as many offensive rebounds, 21, as UConn just had rebounds total, 24. And when you refer to size and strength and talent, I mean, Aaliyah Boston, you know, let's bring this full circle here, Katie, because she had her 30th double-double of the season. And afterwards, she talks to our Holly Rowe and is clearly just feeling everything.
Honestly, I've been thinking about it since last season because everyone had a picture of me crying at the end of the Final Four, and they played everywhere as if that was some type of, but today we're national champions and I need tears, Holly. I need tears. So if you guys want to smile, here you go. And we're national champions.
So when you refer back to how the season ended with Stanford last year and how Aaliyah Boston was at the center of all of it, explain exactly what happened to her and what this means for her now.
Yeah, so last year, you know, with the time ticking down and the Final Four against Stanford, South Carolina guard Bree Beal drives to the bucket with an opportunity to win the game, and the ball hits the back of the rim, comes off of it, and Aaliyah Boston, who's a rebounding machine, grabs it and then goes immediately for the putback, and it clangs off the back of the rim and falls, and South Carolina loses that game. And Boston was just devastated. You could see it all over her face. You could see the tears. Even when I talked to her about it in January, just asking how she felt in that moment, she immediately started to cry. She felt like she let her team down in that moment. Like, you know, the one thing about Aaliyah Boston is that she feels everything with such abundance. And so tonight, getting an opportunity to lead South Carolina to its second national championship and avenge that loss from last season and come all the way full circle, sweep all the awards, you know, become the Final Four Most Outstanding Player on top of being the consensus National Player of the Year and the Defensive Player of the Year, which has never happened.
Crazy.
Right? Like, that's just never happened. It's just a complete clean sweep. And to do all of that is just such an amazing moment for her. And I think you could see it on the broadcast with just that pure emotion, joy, and celebration. That just pretty much, you know, was the cherry on top for this amazing season that Aaliyah Boston has had.
Yeah, Aaliyah Boston averaging 16 and 16 in the Final Four. And yet, Katie, and yet, she arguably was not the best player in this game because Destiny Henderson, who stands 5'7", had 26 points, helped shut down another person that you've spent a lot of time writing and reporting about, Paige Beckers, UConn star, the reigning player of the year, who only had 14 points to lead UConn. I mean, how would you describe how Destiny Henderson changed this game?
Listen, Destiny Henderson, who South Carolina calls Henny, put that team on her back in crucial moments, whether it was in the beginning of the game, knocking down crucial three-pointers, or in the third quarter, getting a couple of really important fast break baskets. I mean, you know, she had a career high of 26 points tonight. Like, Destiny Henderson came to play, and what she did just cannot be overstated. You know, she's had big moments for South Carolina throughout the season and proven that she can be that spark plug and that leader. But, you know, she was huge for them. And, you know, frankly, I think 5'7 might be a little generous as somebody who has stood next to her. But she plays big every night, and she really played big for him tonight.
And so what do people need to know about South Carolina and Dawn Staley now? Because, again, this is Dawn Staley's second title. I saw her dancing with the trophy. I saw her handing the trophy to a member of the band who looked like his body, like his soul left his body in response. Like, she knows how to work a crowd, right? But this is her second title in her last five tries when you factor in the COVID year where the tournament was canceled. Mm-hmm. Like, what has she established for South Carolina that people need to know if they've been, you know, a little asleep, just assuming that UConn, 14 straight Final Fours, unprecedented, is just going to UConn it every year?
Yeah, I mean, this title takes, you know, just really elevates South Carolina to another level, puts them in another category of discussion when it comes to, you know, the perennial contenders, and certainly for Dawn Staley as a successful coach. You know, it's one thing to get one, it's another thing to get two, and it's another thing to get two in 5 years and be set up to be competitive perennially. And, you know, what Dawn Staley has built at South Carolina is without a doubt, you know, if anybody had any doubts, I think, you know, she put those to rest tonight. You know, a perennial heavyweight factor in collegiate women's basketball, certainly tonight and moving forward in the future. Like, that is just going to be sort of this new reality, because South Carolina is not going away anytime soon. You know, they've led, you know, the nation in attendance at their 18,000 person arena since 2015. And they showed up here tonight. They all flew out. There's so many South Carolina fans here. Like, it was unbelievable to just hear that crowd and see that excitement and that love that that fan base has for South Carolina. And I think now, you know, the nation is sort of looking and saying, oh, well, if once, you know, you could have written them off as a bit of a fluke, you know, they got one. Well, now they've got two. And, you know, it looks like Dawn Staley could very well get three and maybe four, maybe five. You know, she's elevated herself as a coach in that conversation and her program into that conversation as well. So it looks like the sky's the limit, certainly for the Gamecocks.
Yeah, Katie, I liked how you just went LeBron there. LeBron arriving in South Beach. Not one, not two, not three, not four on behalf of Dawn Staley. I like that you did that for her.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little afraid of what she might say if she heard me say that. I might be writing checks that I cannot cash.
And anyway, Katie, I do hear many of the thousands of South Carolina fans milling about in the background near the Coke machine. So I will let you go and actually write and report your story. But as always, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Pablo.
All right, after this break, we're going to take you from Minnesota to New Orleans.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Rebound secured by RJ Davis. Davis will dribble it out, and the Heels kick their rivals to the curb on their way to their 12th national title game. And in the process, end the career of the Hall of Fame coach Mike Krzyzewski. North Carolina 81, Duke 77.
Myron Metcalf, you are in New Orleans right now, and I just want to cut right to the chase here. What was it like to be in that building on Saturday night?
It was just chaos, man. You know, I've covered a lot of games, and nothing really surprises me at this point, but just every moment, literally every moment in that game felt gigantic.
Shoot Manic, 3 left side, got it! Oh, Manic! Ice water in the veins! 73-71, Tar Heels by 2.
And it felt like you were watching something that was bigger than a college basketball game. And then the ending, you know, North Carolina fans, there was a dude after the game, maybe like 20 minutes after the game. I kid you not, Pablo. He was standing on his chair. This guy's probably in his 40s. He had his arms, you know, held out wide. And he's like looking up at the ceiling with his mouth open, like raindrops are falling from the sky or something like that. Like people just didn't know what to do. They literally didn't know what to do in that moment, man. It was chaotic.
I mean, normally, dude, I've covered you. We both have. We've covered Final Fours in football stadiums. But the Superdome in New Orleans, full of 71,000 people, it didn't feel too big. Usually, it feels too big. It feels weird to put basketball in a football venue. This felt appropriate.
It did, man. And it felt like it was in the right city, just in the right place. And like you're going into the game, you're sitting in the game, you're like, okay, the buildup is one of the greatest buildups in NCAA history.
Yes.
And then you're in the middle of the game and you're like, you're talking to other people in press row who've also done a lot of this. And they're going, man, this is better than I even imagined. And then you get to the last 5 minutes and one of my colleagues, you know, in the business looked at me and he said, I can't even take it. And I understood what he was saying. Like, yeah, we're reporters and all that, but you're just in the middle of this moment where you can't believe you're down to the last 5 minutes and this game has given you everything you thought it would and more.
Dude,
I just can't compare it to any event I've ever been a part of.
Well, you have the job. And again, the run up to this game for people who have somehow, I don't know, for the unfrozen cavemen out there who missed the last year of college basketball, this is the first time Duke and Carolina have ever met in the NCAA tournament. This is the last, now officially the last game for Coach K. And your job, Myron, was to put your hands on your keyboard live and see this from every angle, from the present as well as from retrospect. Your job was to do that while everybody was literally throwing their hands as far away from their body as they could.
You're trying to take in every play, but like there wasn't a turning point until the end. It was like everything was a turning point. You know?
18 lead changes. Byron, I mean, describe the flow of this game, because the first half, it looked messy at times. There was a sense of like, man, everyone's kind of feeling the nerves here. But that second half, describe how the second half sort of felt to you watching very close up with your ears kind of already deafening.
Yeah, I think the first half was like, okay, these guys are as nervous as everybody, right? Like they're feeling the pressure and the intensity. Or you can see the nerves. You know, you can see Duke forcing shots. You can see Carolina, that offense not flowing the way that it should be. But to your point, the second half, it was like everybody came out focused. You understood in the second half that you were watching legitimately two of the best teams in college basketball, and they were both on their A games. And then you just didn't know what was going to happen for like 15 minutes. And I just haven't been to many games like that.
You can't pre-write, Ryan. Like the whole trick of being a sports writer covering a live event courtside is, all right, I'm going to pre-write a little bit of this. And yeah. I'd imagine you just kept looking for that spot and you could not find it.
And what happened was, Pablo, like you get to the end of the game and you realize that somebody's going to need a star. These last 5 minutes, somebody's going to rise. And you assumed it would have been someone with Duke.
Yeah.
Like Paulo Bancaro's there and Mark Williams is there. Yeah. And Trevor Keels.
One of the first rounders, maybe the lottery pick. That's the guy who rises up and takes over.
That's what you're assuming. And then all of a sudden, Caleb Love just decides that he's going to play another game on Monday night. He's not going to go home. You know, and his team ain't going home. But there's really nothing you can do about it.
13 to shoot. Love dribbling. Gets a screen. Three, top of the key. Oh, he got it! Caleb Love gives North Carolina the four-point lead.
So Caleb Love, the guard for the North Carolina Tar Heels, he is not the guy that Vegas would have said, this is the one who takes a three with 25 seconds left, calls his own number to go up four and basically finally give this game a turning point. I mean, explain for people, Myron, who Caleb Love is, because his career, like the up and down aspect of it, was kind of reflected in this game. Like the first half was one thing. The second half, that's when he had 22 of his 28 points.
So every town, every city in America, if you go to your gym on Saturday morning, there's like a 42-year-old who shoots 17 threes a game. And like when he's on, he's amazing. And like his team stays on the court all day.
Yep.
And when he's off, you're like, dude, why are you taking those shots? Like, that's who Caleb Love is going to be at that age. Like, that's what he is, dude. He is pickup run superstar. And just the way he plays. I mean, the dude comes down the court and hits a step back 24-foot three-pointer. Like, what do you do about that? Like, if you're Duke, that's not in the film. There's no way to stop that.
No.
But you could just see his courage in the middle of the chaos. Caleb Love was the one guy who looked around and said, it's going to be on my shoulders and I'm going to get the job done. And he's just nodding his head after everything he's doing, man. Like, you just saw a confidence with him that you didn't see with anybody else down the stretch of that game.
No, it was Caleb time, said Caleb Love, basically. Yes. I mean, he had the first 6 points of the second half, had the last 6 points of the second half. And I mean, Myron, like, this is the sort of game where, oh, Caleb Love is now like an immortal in college basketball, in certainly the state of North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, he can walk around the state of North Carolina now without a wallet. Like he's going to be taken yes. care of no matter where he goes. He's going to be okay for the rest of his life because the people I talk to down here, man, who are affiliated with this program, who support this program, they're calling that the biggest win maybe in program history. And that's crazy, right? Because that team has a bunch of national championships, but just the meaning of that game and Caleb Love to be the hero, man, that dude is going to be thought of and highly regarded for the rest of his life among North Carolina fans.
But the guy whose wallet, as you alluded to before, is going to get a lot bigger, right? Paolo Banchero is going to be making a lot of money. We know this. We know that he is a projected number one overall pick. So explain how his night went, Myron, because you figure you have that guy. He's easily the best player on the floor. But what happened?
You know, I think you saw a lot of flashes of brilliance with Paolo Banchero.
Banchero, three on the left wing. That'll drop. Duke leads it 11-10 as the freshman drains his first from deep. 11-10.
I mean, you stand next to him and you see how big he is. I mean, that dude has the body of a 28-year-old in the NBA. Physically, he has been ready to go for a long time. And you saw some of those moments where, you know, Paolo could do things that probably no one else on the court could do.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw the effort that North Carolina put into slowing him down. I think people remember the last 5 minutes of the game. And I think what they'll remember is North Carolina found a star in Caleb Love, who just decided that he was going to wheel his team to victory. And Paolo had trouble doing that. Duke kind of spread the ball around. But there were moments, certainly, Pablo, where you're sitting there and going, Paolo's got to answer. And I think that's a lot to put on the shoulders of a freshman, right? A first-year guy, even if he is.
And especially, Myron, when, as you say, like, North Carolina's strategy seemed to be, let's make life difficult
yes.
for Paolo Banchero.
They were going to make somebody else try to beat them down the stretch. But there were still those moments where you were like, man, this could be his moment. And I think Caleb Love really froze those young guys because they're looking at him and playing this carefree basketball on the biggest stage maybe ever. I don't think that's an exaggeration.
No.
And they're trying to find that gear. And I think it was in that moment when Caleb Love hits that three where suddenly I'm looking at a Duke team that's led by some freshmen, right? Guys who are just trying to find that gear, including Paolo, in a really amazing game. Paolo's still going to be a top five pick.
No doubt.
I think he's still an incredible NBA prospect. But I think people will remember maybe the shots he didn't take in the last 5 minutes compared to those he did.
And the follow-up question about how North Carolina pulled this off, Myron, of course, is the Hubert Davis question. Because we alluded to the roller coaster that Caleb Love's game and season and career at Carolina has been. But Hubert Davis, again, it can't be stressed enough, I feel like. People wanted him fired at points this season, his first season ever as the head coach of the Tar Heels.
I talked to Hubert early after he was hired. I did a piece on him. And, you know, following him in those first few months, there were certainly doubters. But, I mean, Hubert understood that. Like, Hubert played there. Mm-hmm. Hubert knew the stakes. But I think he couldn't understand the weight of that job until he became the head coach and he's playing Kentucky and he's losing to Michigan. And all of a sudden you realize that they expect you to find a way. They don't care that Brady Manek just showed up. They don't care that you're a new head coach. They don't care that you got all these pieces to fit together. They expect you to win. So through those first 2 months of the year, I think Hubert was trying to figure it out. Even through the first month and a half of the ACC season, he's still trying to figure out this team and what they are and what they have. And then something happened in late February. I think just before that Duke win on March 5th, they played Syracuse, and they just went on this run. And you can make the case they've been the best team in America over the last month. Hubert Davis, it took him some time to figure out this team, to employ this style, which is a very NBA kind of style.
Yeah, explain the style, Myron, because the style that Hubert Davis is playing is not the style that he inherited from Roy Williams.
Oh, it's an anti-Roy Williams style. I mean, Roy Williams is like old school, throw the ball in the paint, get every offensive rebound imaginable, and Hubert Davis is like, no one on my team plays a position. You're just a basketball player. We're going to play five guys on the perimeter sometimes. We're going to maybe play one in the paint. Armando Bacot has been that guy. I'm going to take Brady Manek, who's 6'9". I'm going to run him off screens, and he's hitting threes in the corner. And I'm going to dare opposing teams to keep up with that. Like, that's essentially his thing. Like, he's okay shooting a bunch of three-pointers and his team missing a bunch of them if they find a way down the stretch to win. And I think that's their gift. Like, North Carolina is counting on being in a close game in the last 5 minutes and thinking that you can't keep up with them offensively. And guess what? For the last month of the season, Hubert Davis has been completely correct on that assessment. And teams just have not been able to rally with North Carolina in the last 5 minutes of a game because offensively they're so unique and dynamic.
Yeah, they were 100-1 before the tournament started in Vegas to win the title. They were an 8 seed. They are now tied for the lowest seed to ever make the NCAA championship in history. And on the other side of things, Myron, this is where I just empty a box that has all of these Coach K stats in it, right? Like, the dude, I mean, again, 13 Final Fours, the most ever, just passing John Wooden, 9 title games, 5 national titles, 1,202 wins, 132 NCAA tournament games. And all of that, all of the things that Mike Krzyzewski has accomplished, it all feels like, well, they're always going to have a trump card on me. Carolina fans are going to have their way with this whole thing for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, it's never going to go away for Carolina fans, right? Like, even if the rest of the country moves on, North Carolina fans will always have the reality that they ruin Coach K's send-off at Cameron Indoor Stadium with more than 90 players in the building. And then they'll also have they beat him in the final game of his career and stopped him from getting that 6th national championship in the first and only meeting of North Carolina and Duke. You know, it has to hurt. It has to hurt. I think Jay Will, you know, was sending a text to people this morning saying how much it hurts because you had a team with 5 projected first round picks, right? You had Coach K in the last season. Hubert Davis, there was a stretch in January where maybe people thought they might not make the tournament. This is an 8 seed. This was not a team that had any guarantees. This is not a team that has a top 5 pick anchoring their team. And this was a first-year head coach. Yeah, he played in the NBA. Yeah, he spent 9 years next to Roy. But you know how many of those guys move over one seat and fail when they become head coaches? Mm-hmm. So it's all of those things, too. You didn't lose to Roy and Sean May or Tyler Hansbrough. You lost to Brady Manek and Caleb Love and a first-year coach in Hubert Davis. That's the part that's going to make this stick, too.
I mean, Myron, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic saying this, but it felt like the worst loss of Coach K's career came in his final game, and it feels, as a result, like the rivalry's kind of decided. Like, I just don't know how, as a Duke fan, you can take anything away from those 42 years of Mike Krzyzewski and now make a plausible argument that we may have come out on top here.
Yeah, I mean, you know what, Duke fans are going to say, we got five national championships. You know, he had 1,202 wins, 13 ACC championships.
Yep, count the rings. Season. They're going to do all of that. Count the
They're
rings,
gonna do
bro.
That. But there's going to be some dude from North Carolina in the corner of the barbershop who's just going to scream Hubert Davis and walk out of the barbershop. That's what he's going to do.
Yep.
Like, and you're not going to be able to say anything against that because of the way this ended. Now, here's the thing, Pablo. If Coach K retires 4 weeks from now, 6 weeks from now, it's not the same. It's big, but it ain't the same.
Yep.
The fact that we knew this was it,
and
they get to this last stage in New Orleans with the expectation that they're going to find a way to win. You got all this NBA talent with 5 minutes to play and you lose. That's going to be the thing that North Carolina fans will always, always go back to. You can never get Saturday back again.
It's a great point. Everybody agreed what was on the line here. Everybody knew what was at stake. We've been talking about it for weeks and months now. And it's important to realize also that still on the line, Myron, is the actual NCAA championship. So after the break, we'll get on to the other side of the bracket where Kansas just happens to be, you know, patiently hanging out.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So the undercard of this title fight, Myron, which is still technically, again, not the literal title fight, was Kansas and Villanova. How would you describe how soon this one seemed to have a turning point?
Right away. I mean, you know, Kansas goes up 10-0. Automatically, you knew that Justin Moore being out for Villanova with the Achilles injury was going to affect them. You know, they took some big leads at one point. I think they were up 38-19. And they were just the dominant force. And in the second half, give Jay Wright credit. Like, he kept chopping into that lead. Got it down to like 8 at one point, 7, even 6 for a little bit. But I tell you what, man, being courtside for that, you never had the sense that Kansas was in trouble. And you can make the case that Kansas has been playing the best basketball coming into New Orleans in the Final Four. Destroyed Miami, you know? Yes, Providence, that game was close. But go look at, you know, what Kansas did going up 24-12. You know, they put up 113 points per 100 possessions against Creighton, the top defense in the Big East. So they've had some really brilliant, dominant stretches of basketball. And I can understand why they're the favorites going into Monday night, even with what North Carolina did to Duke.
And the guy who seemed to have his coming out party in that sort of big stage way for Kansas was David McCormick.
Dixon runs out on him. Abaji drives, dishes, and McCormick with a two-hand flush. Timeout taken by Villanova. Kansas hitting on all cylinders.
What made him so difficult to stop, their big man for the Kansas Jayhawks?
I mean, he's built like a defensive end or something, man. That's a big, strong dude. And I mean, he had a dunk midway through the second half where I thought he was going to take the rim home with him. And I thought the rim was his.
Up the floor comes Kansas. Carousel lobbed to McCormick in the right block. Got free. And he throws it down with pushes it down to stretch the lead to 12 and a timeout.
He's just a really talented player. The challenge with David McCormick has always been, are you going to show it? Like, are you going to be the guy that you can be in this moment? And he certainly was. They needed him to be tough, and he was. And I think physically, when he's scoring around the rim and he's getting buckets like that, it's just so hard to stop Kansas because you're going to create space for all their perimeter guys, and they're so talented around the perimeter. And I think if Dave McCormick plays that way again, Kansas will be very, very hard to stop. They are a much better team when he's putting up big numbers. You saw that against Villanova. And I don't think Carolina or Duke would have stopped that Kansas team on Saturday night either.
Yeah, I mean, David McCormick, right? Almost 7 feet tall, 25-9 in this game, 10 of 12 from the field. Just unstoppable at points. And now, Myron, when you spin ahead now and you say, okay, those dudes are going to go get a North Carolina team that just felt like they won the Miracle on Ice, right? It's important to remember, the Miracle on Ice, we talked about this with our friend Ryan McGee. That was not the gold medal game. This is going to be the gold medal game. How do you think these teams match up, Kansas and Carolina?
Well, I got to tell you, man, it feels like North Carolina is walking into the Royal Rumble as the Intercontinental Champions or something like that. Like, they just don't have anything to prove.
Yeah.
Like, they're here, and yes, they could win, but Hubert Davis knows he doesn't have to. I think what you saw Saturday after the game was like, North Carolina did what they had to do. They beat Duke. They got to the national title game. Everything from here is icing on the cake. They play very similar styles, actually, in terms of just their philosophy on having one big in the paint, four guys in the perimeter. Sometimes Carolina will go five out, but it's going to be a fast-paced game of really talented guys, two bigs if Armando Bacot can go, and it sounds like he will be able to play, two guys battling, and then, you know, Kansas trying to figure out how to stop Brady Manek running off screens and Ochai Agbaji, you know, hitting big shots for Kansas. And it's going to be a thrilling game. I think Kansas plays that North Carolina style, however, almost better than Carolina does. And I think that's what's going to make this game so fun.
So at the risk of being a little foolish here, Myron, and, you know, asking you to do something that courtside in this game on Saturday night, you really could not do. Do you know how this is going to go? Like, how is this game going to end tonight for the national title?
I'll say I'm the guy who picked Gonzaga to win the national championship. But what I think will happen is I think it's going to be very difficult for North Carolina to come down from their high in 48 hours.
Oh,
I mean, if you're here down in the city on the street, man, I've never seen anything like it. It's Duke and Carolina fans walking side by side, one, you know, with this extreme joy, the other side with this agony. North Carolina's going to have a hard time coming down from that. And I think that works in Kansas's favor. I think Kansas has been playing the most consistent basketball of any team coming into New Orleans, and I think that'll work in their favor. And I think they will beat an emotionally drained North Carolina team that doesn't feel the same pressure. But I also think it'll be a close game. I won't be shocked if North Carolina covers. I think the latest line was 4.5, up from 4 in favor of Kansas. I won't be shocked if North Carolina covers there.
I mean, I myself haven't come down from the high, and I watched at a sports bar in New York. So, Myron, good luck to you in navigating Bourbon Street postgame.
Thanks a lot. I need it.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.